Ramble.
So what happened last week, Miles? Eugene's triumphant return to the podcast.
I'm so upset.
The moment that we've all been waiting for months. You got 7 minutes of video.
Okay, so we got this really fucking cool new mixer, and we got it like a while ago. We got like a year ago. We were using it. Everything was fine. Everything was good. Then I started having an error where it would say it was recording. Everything looks normal. Numbers are going up. Fucking everything's fine. And then I go to the thing and it's like, oh, it won't eject. Oh, it actually only recorded 7 minutes. So they sent us a new mixer. I called the place. They were like, okay, it's a problem with the mixer. We'll send you a new mixer. Send the new mixer. We get the new mixer. It's working flawlessly for months, 8 months actually, working completely flawlessly. Then we're cranking out bullshit. Eugene's not here, so the episodes don't matter. Eugene comes back. Eugene comes back. Arguably the people that people are going to want to see. No one wants to see me and Zach and Keith.
No, that's not true.
People don't want to see that.
No.
They want to see hot-ass Eugene come back triumphantly. Eugene comes back to the studio. Mixer only
reports. Well, he's your boss, Miles, so please be careful about the way you speak about him.
It's okay my way. It's not okay if he says that about me. But
yeah, shut your hot-ass up, Miles.
Thanks. Well, easy. So then it doesn't fucking work. It only records 7 minutes. And I don't know if it's a firmware update, but anyway, now we're backup recording on all the cameras. So if shit fucks up, then I'll still have a backup recording.
I blame myself.
I don't blame you at all.
I blame me. I feel like I have a tech curse that follows me around.
Yeah. It could be your juju.
Is that a thing for you? Do you have technology quit on you frequently?
No, but like when other people are using it, sometimes it'll happen. Mm. I feel like I have a ghost, you know, that's on my back.
The ghost in the machine.
Yeah, that like messes up other people's machines.
Yeah. I get that.
I don't do it on purpose though. I think it's a curse.
Yeah, it makes me, you know, it's one of those things where it's ultimately not my fault, but I feel that it is my fault, even though it is not my fault.
I'm proud of you for passing the blame, Miles. Good on you.
Yeah, and the blame is passed on, I guess, I don't know, to who? To
my ghost.
Made the mixer, to the ghost.
Yes, my cursed ghost.
Fucking exactly. Ghost.
Yeah, his name's Shelby.
Shelby.
Yeah.
Good name, by the way. Everyone on the count of three, say the name that you would have if you didn't have your name. Go.
One.
Two, three, Lance.
Buford.
Thelonious.
Buford?
All right.
Well,
no,
I already have like
no
an
more
old
commentary
school,
needed.
I have an old school, like Western name that's dying out. It's dying out with all the great granddads.
Yeah. Okay.
So I figured I would just adopt another endangered name.
Endangered names.
Yeah. That's such a thing. It's called endangered names.
I've never heard that.
Some names have resurgences. Flowers, for instance,
right.
They were a big deal for our grandparents.
Mm.
Then none of the boomers or Gen Xers were named, you know, Rose or Lily or things like that. And then now we are naming our kids those.
They're
names.
Back.
Zach?
My grandmother's name's Evelyn and Rhoda, right? Like, when was the last time you met a Rhoda?
Rhoda. Wow.
But wouldn't that be the most awesome kid in elementary school?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my friend.
Oh my God.
Rhoda.
100%.
And my other friend, Buford.
Buford and Rhoda.
Well, because everyone's names are like Isabella and Jaden.
Yeah.
I want some.
Who do you know named Isabella?
The
That's
kids.
Really
it's like, I think
name.
The number one kids name for our generation naming their kids.
Yeah.
For girls.
Shit.
Yeah.
I like the names that are just like objects. Like someone will be like freaking Pickle. That's a name.
Freaking Pickle.
Or like Lightning McQueen.
That's cool.
Yeah, ka-chow.
That's cool.
Absolutely, ka-chow. Yeah.
Have you thought about kids'
names?
Well,
hey, Eugene, what the fuck's up, bro?
Hey,
I'm glad we got to. I mean, the audience didn't see past 15 minutes of last week's pod, but they're going to see.
No, they did. Well, they didn't see it, but they could have heard it.
They could hear it.
And Rainey's doing a multicam edit that's just two images of the two cameras.
Oh, no.
So it'll look fun. But
I'm glad we get to do a podcast with us and Zach this time to catch up.
Yeah, baby.
Not that catching up is, I mean, people see us not be on screen for 2 weeks and they think we've left somewhere.
Yeah.
All of us are constantly communicating regardless. Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
I still would say talk to you more than my parents and more than anyone else in my life.
How sad for us.
Yeah. A lot of communication.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Zach.
Or sad for my parents. They fucking labored, you know, dealt with my bullshit. I should pick up the phone and call them.
That's true.
What is going on, Zach?
What's going on? I mean, Hey, I should say this on Guilty Pleasures. I said that I had a little Covey exposy. It was my cute way of saying, hey, pandemic's still going on. Winkety wink. Wanted to play it cool by calling it a Covey exposy.
We're
going to
retire that phrase immediately.
Yeah, probably for the best. I had a breakthrough case. I am doing great. I'm doing fine. I am cleared. Doctor says I am good to go. But it is, you know, a good reminder while you guys are traveling for Thanksgiving today. We're only going to get downer for 1 second. Breakthrough cases are possible. So it's awesome. This is the first Thanksgiving in 2 years where we're all probably able to go travel and feel a measured version of safety, but doesn't hurt to get tested because you never know. And in our case, it caused a lot of logistical headaches.
Yeah, but I mean, breakthrough cases for people who are vaccinated still happen. So just be careful out there.
That's right, babies.
Still happens.
Yeah.
But I'm feeling good and I'm ready to chat. I'm ready to wax poetic. I'm ready to talk about bullshit. And I'm ready to debate what's the most fuckable Thanksgiving food. Ready? Go.
Turkey, obviously.
God, Miles.
God, Miles.
Come on. You're telling me the turkey doesn't...
It's such an obvious
You're going to look
choice.
Me in the eyes and tell me every time you see a turkey, you don't think about it just a little
Come
bit.
Come on. You guys are...
Absolutely not.
We did do Hot or Not Thanksgiving Edition last year, I think. No, maybe it was the year before. I don't remember.
We're just repeating disgusting concepts in our minds.
Wait, how long have we been doing this podcast?
2 years.
That feels wrong.
We're at 100 and episode 100 and I don't know, 20, something like that.
When should we end, Miles? What's the finale?
That's we a just really go till good we question. Die. Well, I do think I want to do a 420 special, but that doesn't have to be at episode 420. I think that could be just like that could be honestly on Christmas. We release a 420 special and we all get ultra stoned and do the podcast. Would be very funny to me.
Oh man, I don't
sounds great.
I'm weird when I'm stoned.
Well, that's why it'd be a fun podcast.
For people
you're
who don't,
adorable when you're high.
Yeah, when people who I don't partake very often, but people who partake often are quite normal a lot when they're
sure.
when they're high. So you know, you could be around a high person and not even know it.
You could be
you
around,
could be high right now and not, not even know.
But it actually like affects
you don't
me.
Even.
Yeah,
I'm doing Thanksgiving. Well, first of all, your Thanksgiving plans. I'm very curious what you boys are doing for Thanksgiving. Are you going to see fam? Are you hanging out here?
Well, I'd say Eugene and I are both non-traditional Thanksgiving folk.
Yeah,
I know in the past you've talked about your love of non-traditional Thanksgiving cuisine.
Yes. And that being, I don't eat Thanksgiving food anymore.
And I'm all aboard that train. Like, just make it a lavish meal. Who cares? Why do you have to eat the same thing every year forever? Boring.
I think people really stand by it because it's foods that don't make sense outside of the holiday. So the specialness of it is what they attach to. Honestly, some frankly mediocre dishes, in my opinion.
Ooh, shots fired.
Shots are fired.
But I also mean, think like
there's
just,
a reason.
Yeah, proactively decolonizing the holiday as a whole is a great challenge to try to instill in families. And I know it's very hard with a lot of people having very traditional parents. But my family's not very traditional, so I've been able to try to instill more of that appreciation of indigenous cultures, recognizing the month. I know that's an uphill battle for a lot of people. So I certainly have been very blessed with a family that was already very confused by Thanksgiving to begin with.
Well, in following the theme of being as uncolonial as possible, I'm going to a tiny Mexican beach town. very exciting. My family and Maggie's family are going to be spending the first Thanksgiving together ever. Our families are going to be together for a week, which is intense beyond a point that either of us fully thought through before we booked this plan.
That is cute. And have all the family met each other? Like, is everyone homies?
They've all met each other. You know, it's possible that Stephanie has not met Maggie's sister who's coming in person. We've had a couple dinners. And so I just keep telling myself this is going to be that 7 times in a row.
Yeah, big. Yeah, for sure.
It's a lot. I mean, it's a little intimidating and we're both just trying to not think about it and assume that nothing bad will happen. And I think they're both they're all very agreeable. And honestly, Maggie's parents are the most agreeable. And my parents, if you're listening, you're the ones we're worried about.
Right, you worried they're going to have a bad time.
You better watch your tongue.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Margot, Adam, you're very particular. Look, I'm their child, okay? Who do you think birthed me? If anyone's going to rock the boat, it's going to be the Kornfelds.
sort of in-law family dynamic is very fascinating. The one thing I can say is that, you know, most people generally can skate by. There's just like a formality to events, co-joined events. Yeah. Like, hopefully you have people that really hit it off across the family aisle. I will guarantee you there will always be one person who hates another person and the other person hates that person in every cross-family situation. There's always one.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, what I'm most grateful for is that there is the one person in my normal Thanksgiving family dynamic I'm going to say as little as possible to avoid specifying who that person is.
Oh, come on.
But there's one person that creates issues, and that person will not be there. So that, I think, like, we're all going to just be so relieved that everything's going to be wonderful.
And what type of issues has this person caused in the past?
Oh, boy. You know what? This person's never going to listen to this episode. That's fine.
You don't have to air your family dirty laundry.
This person once cried over food that was served.
And is
an adult human being.
That's tough. That's really tough. Because
it wasn't up to their standards.
That's basically what happened.
Oh, no.
Okay, yeah.
It was incredible.
That's really interesting.
And then my grandmother said, quit being such a little bitch at Thanksgiving dinner.
Wow, that's great.
Oh, God. And that's honestly, like, I know that everyone hates that part of Thanksgiving. It's like, oh, your crazy uncle's coming. Oh, no, my parents are going to fight about politics. I kind of love that drama. Yeah. I'm a little gossipy bitch, and I love watching the fireworks happen and just fucking eating my vegan pecan pie in the corner.
It's awesome. Vegan pecan.
you bite your tongue. What about you, Eugene?
You know, we don't have as much of this responsibility to have to always see each other in the holidays. Mm-hmm. I think it's been nice to, you know, be very selective and choose where and when we see each other. Because I know more families out there do put a lot of weight on tradition and making sure that you spend time with one another.
Right.
So I have like old dramatic family stories. Clearly that, I mean, I'm just going to say it. It's always an aunt or an uncle.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the sitch, which is kind of hilarious. Cause if you think about it, if you have siblings, you might become that person one day.
Oh, that's upsetting.
Oh,
just remember that. I mean, as much as we like to complain about them, one of us will be that person.
Yeah. That's tough.
And they're going to be like, oh God, Uncle Zach's coming.
Uncle Zach's
no,
gonna
he's going to keep showing us his old YouTube videos.
He's showing us candy competition.
It's so embarrassing. He keeps trying to explain why he was so popular. But yeah, I have some fond memories of ridiculous, stupid family fights and arguments.
It's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, I don't know if I want to say this on the show. At our,
all right, let's just all give. Look, I went there. Come on, give me a taste of your drama.
All right, let me get a taste. Okay, this is something that happened. I don't know if I talked about this on the show before, but at my, I had two weddings. One was a family wedding. One was a regular like wedding with our friends that you guys were at. And at the family wedding, two of my cousins from opposite sides of the family hooked up,
And
you told
Niles.
But they were Take related. It back. They were related.
Sure. Wait, so it was like a Brady Bunch situation?
No, it was like my cousin on my dad's side and my cousin on my mom's side. Like two people who aren't.
So it sounds so deeply wrong. And you're like, it's okay. So
they're related through marriage.
Through like
someone married. So there's someone
through my parents. That's how their relation.
Got it.
It's my cousins on my mom's side. My cousin
via
my
marriage.
Side.
Got it. Okay.
And we were all like, should we call the police? <Is this?"> If you're anybody in my family, I'm sorry to spill the family tea.
Was it like in front of the turkey?
No, they were like young people, and we kind of saw them kind of go there on a walk through the woods, and it was like they were kind of, and we were like, oh. This is interesting.
It's the most forbidden love.
Yeah. Well, they're not actually cousins. I guess they are. What is that?
No, second? You're still technically a cousin, but you're not a genetic cousin.
It was funny. It was interesting.
But honestly, though, I support this relationship. I support this union. Think about how much money they're going to save on the wedding invite. It's like, should we invite your family or my family? It's the same thing.
What's the opposite? What's the opposite of Stan?
Yeah.
I need an opposite of Stan.
The opposite of Stan is probably
Eminem.
I don't know. Slim Shady.
Slim Shady. I'm just total Slim Shading that.
I'm going to 8 Mile that.
I'm 8 Miling that entire situation.
I'm a Mekhi Phifer. I'm a Mekhi Phifer this so hard.
I don't care how roundabout way you explain fucking your...
I'm just saying they kissed in the woods, I think.
That's even creepier.
Yeah.
Not even the courtesy to like... Because they knew they were being naughty. They had to walk out into the actual wilderness to...
It was... Wow.
To smash their cousin. It's...
They're not Miles. Even, they had never met before.
Yeah, still,
did
it's still weird.
Did they have that moment? Do you think, Miles, they had that moment like, this is so wrong, right? We shouldn't do this.
I don't even know.
That means they fucking know. That means they know it was wrong. That means part of their brain were like, this is hot.
But maybe maybe I'm being judgmental because I've never had a hot cousin.
Yeah.
Who's related to me via marriage.
I think it was also a thing of like, they were two of the only people who were that age at the wedding. So it was like, if you're whatever it is, like
there's a dearth of options. That was the reason. I guess I'm going to hook up with my cousin. So you're not that Carolina.
No, they're not related. They were related though. They never met.
It's so weird.
It is weird.
You can label someone as family.
Well, I'm telling you, we were like, should we call the police?
I would have been in the corner saying, yes, I'm already on the phone.
We give everyone, it was the talk of the wedding. It was very funny.
I would just do a citizen's arrest at them.
Citizen's arrest my cousin.
Miles runs off into the woods. No. I'm going to tell you what, though. And I don't know if this is weird to say, but I do have a hot cousin. And
okay, it is weird to say,
by the way. Yeah, you're arrested. I think I'm going to arrest you.
Through marriage,
I didn't say that I was attracted to my hot cousin, but it's tough. So I went to the same high school. God, I hope this doesn't get back to my cousin.
Let's call your cousin.
I had a second cousin. Second cousin who I went to high school with, she was a year older than me, and it was known that she was a hot person. And then my friends would be like, they would find out that we were related, and they would love telling me how hot my cousin is. And I'm like, this isn't fun for me. And then I would hear about people, you know, you hear about the hookups that go on and like the freaky shit that so-and-so did. And so I would hear about this stuff with this person that I grew up like doing the fucking matzah hunt with at Passover. Like we grew up in diapers together.
Well,
and
that's what they call it. This
the matzah hunt.
Don't you?
Yeah, I bet you were doing the matzah hunt. I'm calling this episode so Zach's gross. Hot cousin.
Oh God, no. We are ixnaying this convo. It is weird though, because I know certain families, they're really, really extended.
Yeah.
Y'all know like third and fourth cousins. Mm-hmm. I'd never had that experience.
Right.
And I do have friends who are like, oh, I just met my second cousins. They happen to be really hot. I always tell them that's a really weird statement to make.
Yeah, you shouldn't talk about that.
But apparently it's a very common thing for, I'm sure people are going to sound off in the comments, but
about
their second and third cousins who happen to be hot. But I think it's weird, but I also don't want to judge because I don't know any of my cousins beyond the first ones.
I have a theory. You know how people are like, especially narcissists are attracted to versions of themselves. Mm-hmm. Like you're like, that person's pretty hot. And you're like, well, that person just looks like you. Second cousins are just far enough away where you're like, there's something about them. And it's like, yeah, it's your fucking DNA.
Yeah. Well, did you know that sometimes you'll think someone smells weird
or you won't like the taste of their saliva when you're kissing them because you are...
Because they're your cousin.
No, guys, yes. This is a very bad... No.
Literally, this is
the
thing.
We have walked down a very dark path.
No, literally, it's like...
Into the woods behind Miles' house, apparently.
Evolutionarily, it might be that like you have ancestors that are related and genetically you don't want to copulate with those people because you don't want to create spawn.
I've heard of this. Yeah. Incompatible spit. Maybe the person just doesn't floss.
That's also, that could be it. Sure.
I really hope the first thing white people especially don't have to think when someone has a weird taste in your mouth is, God, they must be my cousin. Oh, that is so
If you're anybody in my family who's listening to this, I'm sorry for airing the dirty laundry, but it's too funny to not.
Miles, don't worry. No one in your family listens to this.
They definitely don't. That's for damn sure.
I would just like to officially endorse as the tripod that we don't want you to like ever seek out or like think it's chill generally to make out with a cousin, whatever.
Tripod does not condone cousin fucking.
Yeah, it's okay. If you have to have a caveat from a story where everyone recoils in horror, then don't be part of that story.
Don't be part of the story,
It's not through marriage. It's through marriage. I'm like, no, yeah, you already got me horrified.
Yeah, I'm scared about that now.
Well, okay, Miles, I'm looking at the itinerary, the agenda for the podcast we've talked about cousin fucking.
Yeah,
what was it that you wanted to talk about next?
Yeah.
Didn't you have an idea originally to do like warm holiday memories, but you got me and Zach, so you're going to be totally off the rails this
warm
podcast.
Warm holiday. Well, yeah, I'm curious about warm holiday memories of yesteryear. For the example, this is the Thanksgiving I'm staying here. We're not going anywhere.
Oh.
I'm going to stay at home, which I've never done.
Do you have any family coming?
No. Because we traveled so much for the weddings and our honeymoon, we were like, for Thanksgiving and Christmas, let's stay in Los Angeles.
That's going to be nice.
Are you going to invite friends or are they all gone?
No, some friends that are in town, Will's coming over. But some friends that are in town are coming over and we're going to make a turkey or, you know, what have you.
Friendsgiving is people
fucked
call
up,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Friendsgivings are usually good.
With this turkey, Miles.
I won't tell you what I'm going to do with the turkey.
Okay, boys. Okay. Who puts the reins on you people?
You haven't been here. So
gross. Don't talk about copulating with a turkey.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Your mother's listening to this.
We miss you so much.
We miss you a lot. We need you. See, that's the energy you bring. You bring the off switch.
The pure cynical disdain.
Yeah. You bring the
loss of hope for humanity.
That's enough, actually. Yes.
The feeling of just wanting to slowly wither away and die.
Yeah.
Classic.
You bring that in droves, I would say.
Yeah. My warmest holiday memory is when my mom announced that she was divorcing my dad.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. And you just thought sort of the sun is setting on this situation and to new beginnings.
And it ended up being the best decision our family ever made.
There you go.
Yeah. That's nice. But that Christmas was not fun.
I bet not.
No.
Raddest Christmas gift you ever got.
Someone just asked me that. I don't think I ever got like an amazing present for the holidays.
Really?
Yeah. It was always really standard. And we got savings bonds a lot. Which back in the day,
they give you like bonds.
Yeah, they gave us like
so practical
investments into like our college funds,
like a bail bondsman,
basically, but for university. So
interesting.
It'd be like $50 going to your college and like a pair of socks.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, definitely.
But my mom also really didn't like how Christmas was. I've told this story before, how she really hated how the credit was going to this strange, magical, imaginary man.
She wanted the credit.
She wanted the credit.
Yeah.
So I got better presents for my birthday right after the holidays because she could write her name on the package.
Oh, yeah. My parents would always do. And Zach, I mean, sorry for sort of speaking about something that, you know, you didn't necessarily have, but.
I don't think he's missing out.
Well, sure. Holiday joy.
Yeah. Santa didn't come to the synagogue, but I did. Generally, my parents would write mom and dad on some of the presents and Santa on some of the presents.
Which is so ridiculous. It's so many presents you got to buy.
I know. It's crazy.
I would hope the worst present is from Santa.
Yeah.
And the better present is from mom and dad.
I'm going to surprise you here, actually. The Kornfeld household did celebrate Christmas.
Oh, really?
That's awesome. A lot of people think that I grew up without it. And it's because my sister's birthday, Stephanie, she was born on Christmas Day. So growing up, Christmas for us was Steffy-mas. And I fucking won. Because I got presents on her birthday. It was sick. We did like little shitty gifts for Hanukkah where my mom would just like find little knickknacks. I mean, that's where my love of Boop and Bops comes from, is she would find like eight little things And then, you know, one real present. But as I got older, it got less and less real.
Yeah.
And the best Christmas present that I ever got was actually a present that I basically stole from her. we together got the Lego Maker Steven Spielberg Movie Maker kit, a kit that I've talked about a lot. It is the first thing that I started making movies with. It's what began my entire love affair with storytelling, was making these little stop motion movies with the Lego set. And it was a gift that was supposed to be for the two of us. Stephanie will tell you she never got to touch it once because I was enraptured with this thing.
Yeah, that's a cool present. That's like really rad.
Wait, you stole her birthday present?
No, it was our shared Christmas present.
No, I thought it was Steph. You just called it Stephmas.
Yeah, Stephmas.
That was clearly that was her holiday and birthday.
You stole it from her.
Yeah. She also got birthday yes, okay. If the takeaway there is that I'm a bad person, sure, we can go there.
Yeah.
Have you ever said sorry to her?
I have so much to apologize for that that's not even on the radar.
What's the best holiday? I'm thinking Christmas, thank you, birthday.
Well, everyone knows my opinion. I think Halloween's the best.
Oh, you like Halloween. I guess Halloween I consider in a different category. Halloween's like a festival for us all. But yeah. Christmas and Thanksgiving are celebrated privately.
Oh, you think like the family holidays?
Yeah, I guess so.
Do you consider Easter a family holiday?
Easter's like a brunch and an egg.
I don't know, I'm kind of over holidays in general.
Interesting. Speak on that.
I think that we should just have more vacations for everyone.
Yeah, that's good.
And just forget all the old bullshit.
Every Friday is a holiday.
Yeah.
My book.
Oh my God. I co-sign. As the owner of this company, I co-sign 4-day weeks. Let's do it, Miles.
By God, I'd love that. That'd be fantastic.
Start the revolution.
Thursday.
Here's the thing that I do find very funny is that because we are just such an overworked society, there's this unwritten agreement that the week between Christmas and New Year's is just Degenerate Week.
Yeah.
And which, by the way, is a great name for a movie. But everyone is just decided that for 1 week a year, we're all just going to become miserable people. We're going to go back to who we were as children. We're going to wear sweatpants and pajamas all the time. We're going to eat like shit. We're going to get fucked up all the time.
Yeah.
And then it just culminates with the ultimate bender of New Year's. You're hungover. New Year starts. Let's be better people.
Time doesn't exist between
it's a weird Christmas little and area. New Year's.
Yeah, I think it's beautiful. People usually just like sit on their asses.
That's great. I know. I was thinking about what I'm going to do. And I was like, I guess I'll fucking bake.
Turn into a couch.
I was like, yeah. To me, it's like everything gets cleaned and then I get to fucking do whatever I want.
Oh, the worst was when I was a server, I had to work Christmases. So I would work.
That's
tough. Well, because I also would work. I worked at like a Chinese restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So the Jewish clientele would come in.
Busy season. And
I needed those tips. So then I would work in the holiday season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was not a huge holiday person, but watching everyone else fake that they loved each other and hang out with their families, that does do a little something on your soul.
It does.
So, shout out to everyone working during the holidays. It's tough. It's tough.
I think I've spoke on this in the past, but there's it's a fascinating read if you want to research the surprisingly touching connection between the Chinese American and Jewish American communities in New York in the early 1900s. And they were two of the only communities that had nothing to do on Christmas, and the way that Jewish tradition of eating Chinese food was born. There was like a real camaraderie there and like, well, this is the only place open. And then it became our tradition over the years.
Yeah. Fuck assimilation.
Fuck assimilation.
Make your own traditions.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
Damn right.
We say, as we talk about making turkeys.
Yeah. I do like it.
Can I bring the conversation somewhere?
Hit it.
Do I have permission, Captain?
Absolutely.
We were talking about, you know, my beginnings in filmmaking with Legos, and you have a Eugene and Zach pod here. I mean, we are the two cinephiles of the group. The Try Guys, share creative interests, but certainly of the group, Ned and Keith come from a performance tree, right? Mm. That, if you guys don't know, audience, that's how they found their way to the Try Guys. Eugene and I did not. I mean, we did some performance, but that wasn't our career ambition. And so I'm curious, Eugene, I don't know if I actually know what was the first time you picked up a camera. And let's fucking jam a little bit.
Oh God, the first time I picked up a camera. I mean, honestly, it was just, you know, toying around with the one that was old school 90s camcorder on those like mini DV tapes that my dad would just shoot.
The small one, yeah.
Yeah, he would just shoot things on. So I would just play around on it, but I never thought that was a career path because I always thought Hollywood and film and all that was totally foreign and unavailable to me. Mm. So honestly, I think my path was really with writing and with art primarily first, because those are things you don't really need anything fancy for. Mm-hmm. You just need a paper and a pencil, mm-hmm. or like a paintbrush in your imagination. I remember my problem was when I was a kid, I would fail most of my large art projects because they would say, hey, do, I don't know, like the tissue paper painting, mm-hmm. Within the day and then turn it in the end of the day. And I would actually take the project and I would spend a year on it. And I would come back to the teacher and I did like a whole finger pastel painting. And I recreated this, the Raft of Medusa by Theodore Jericho. I remember this like very specifically. This was like in the sixth grade.
Jeez, yeah.
And she said, well, I had to fail you on that project, but I'm going to hang this up in my home forever, which was great. But I just didn't think, I always thought like, I really want to just work really hard on these projects because I was really inspired. Mm-hmm. But I didn't quite understand the constraints of time or grades.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, traditional schooling wasn't the best for me. But then, yeah, I had a wonderful teacher who saw how passionate I was about, you know, art, writing, dance, mm-hmm. theater, choir, and suggested I pursue film school. So it was really a teacher who told me that. Hmm. So thank you, teachers. Mrs. Kohler.
That's right.
Thank you, Mrs. Kohler. There's someone out there who has the original Eugene Liang art hanging in her house potentially.
Still.
Oh, wow. I don't recommend kids doing that. Yeah, but it was very much like that was what me tapping into, you know, I think my first, like, you know, doing something for passion's sake as opposed to reward's sake, which I think is two very different things.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you remember when you just fucked around with a mini DV cam? Were you editing it or would you film a take, stop it, and then check it and then be like, okay, next scene, and then film and rewind? Like, did you do that whole thing?
The latter, Zach, for sure. Yeah, film, stop, run to another place, film, stop.
And then rewind it if it wasn't good enough, do it again. I had a VHS. My dad fixed old electronics. I think we found this somewhere, but it was like a tape that had, you put blank VHS tapes. They were just like the big ass. The thing was fucking huge. And then we'd shoot stuff on that.
And then you were playing on, so fun. What were you playing on, Zach? You're a little younger, so were you on iMovie or something?
So I did all of this. I mean, the Lego set had a rudimentary editing system on it.
Oh, and dang. Honestly,
that's so cool.
That is cool.
It was the coolest thing. I mean, I know viewers are like, oh my God, he's talking about this fucking Lego set again, but it was so cool.
And you had a shirt as well.
And I had a super cool shark shirt, because I don't know if you guys know this. It had these slashes on the side. Yeah. There was someone in the comment section last episode who was like, yeah, does Zach not know? Like, he did a whole episode on it. I'm like, yeah, I do. Yeah. I do know.
He knows.
I did the rewind stop, but then pretty quickly I discovered that my mom's computer, we were early Mac adopters, and it had iMovie. So this was when I was in middle school. I just self-taught iMovie, and I just started fucking around on there. All of my early movies were just spoofs. It was like, we talked about 8 Mile before. I did a version of 8 Mile with my teddy bears.
Oh my God.
I did a version of, you know, the Blair Witch Project, but it was the Bear Witch Project. So, and like, honestly, like if you watch Candid Competition, it's basically exactly the same stuff that I did as a child. It's startling how little I've grown.
No, but that's kind of wonderful because it clearly is your perspective and what you enjoy doing. So whether it's, you know, teddy bears or telling an entire restaurant that you are marrying your goth boyfriend,
no, correct,
who is also actually Miles Bonsignore.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, it's just
Miles is my new teddy
bear. Evolution.
I'm your teddy.
Ew,
you're my little teddy, Miles.
No,
you're
we're going to stop. Stop.
I'm going to play this in court. I actually remember I went to a camp that was movie spoofs. It was like you went to the camp and it was called Movie Makers Camp. And you went and it was like this woman would shoot them and she would have us write them and we wrote like spoofs. We did like a Blair Witch Project spoof, but it was just us like doing the Blair Witch Project pretty much. And we did them for a bunch of stuff. Yeah. It was like a bunch of different, you know, things. But one of them we did The Ring as well. It was great. It was great. It's a great time.
Okay, this is we're doing a Try Guys Try Tap Dancing video in December, which I'm super stoked about. And I'm gonna have to find this because one of my movies that I made there was a friend of mine who was a tap dancer. And I'm like, holy shit, I got to use that, man. And so I remade Spider-Man 2, literally like plot beat for plot beat. But instead of him being bit by a radioactive spider, he could tap dance. And it was called Tap Man. And it was awful. And it I hope that the tape is burned and gone forever. But also for our sake, I hope I can find some of this footage.
Yeah, I think it's important that everyone knows that you are going to hate, especially as a burgeoning filmmaker, what you make when you're young. Mm-hmm. Even when you go to film school, or if you're, you know, trying to do things on YouTube, where, mm-hmm. wherever you're accessing, you know, your creativity, it's all part of the growth as an artist. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing more validating than, you know, looking back at something that is so unabashedly you in the most embarrassing ways. But I think that those representations are really important. Like the first time I actually really worked with a camera was I got into a film camp in high school, mm-hmm. in LA, and we actually shot on real film.
That's awesome.
And edited on the old Steinbeck editing mm-hmm. tables.
Yeah. Oh shit.
Yeah. So I got to actually touch the film. Yeah. And then that's cut and so splice cool. and tape, which was really, really, really awesome. And mm-hmm. kind of a dead art now.
Yeah.
It's so stupid.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
so
right.
annoying and frustrating.
And I was 15 and I remember my short from there was a critique on the one child policy in China.
Wow.
Through, that's awesome. Through dance.
That's so
but
cool.
It's so yeah. bad.
Of course.
Like I watch it back and I yeah. cringe so hard.
Yeah.
But I think by, you know, your heart's in the right place. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that that's just, I mean, just like as you get older and wiser, you're just going to get better and better with your craft. And I know a lot of people out there now have so much, such direct access to having immediate feedback to what they do because of the internet. Mm-hmm. And I just think people should just like, you know, remember that your pace at your own time.
Right.
Yeah.
Subtext is lost on children's projects, I think.
Yeah, often. I think kids, you just have to know that you got to let things gestate and grow and you'll mm-hmm. only get better.
And there's a beauty in knowing that is a shared experience, right? That so many creative people look back even a year ago and hate the things that they've made. Yeah. Or just, I mean, I'm a critical person, right? That is my way of creation is to critique myself until I can make it better. So there's maybe nothing that I've ever made that I can look back at and say 100% I nailed it, because I'm always looking at how do I grow? How do I continue to get better?
Mm-hmm. A lot of my shorts, like, yeah, I think there's just something funny about like, I don't know, that I just remember being like in college being like, there's gotta be like a woman in a yellow sundress. And that's like a common theme. I think you see in a lot of like young male like films. I don't know what it is, but it's just like, yeah, what was going on there? Unclear.
Well, I think everyone, depending on your generation, has strong cultural influences.
Yeah, of course.
So you're going to make the most dramatic and silly stuff, especially when you're a teenager.
Yeah.
And you're going to probably put a woman in a yellow or a red dress.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be someone who gets murdered at some point.
Of course, yeah.
But, you know, in the end, it's all about your personal storytelling journey. And I think that, you know.
That's beautiful.
You're working on all these projects now, speaking of.
Yes.
And you're somebody who's intensely self-critical. Now, my yeah. question is, as you're going through these projects, are you able to take a step back from it and be like, okay, other people told me this was good and that's why I'm making it because I, you know, I'm going to be able to sell it or whatever. Are you able to be like, this is good, right? Or is that too hard?
It is extremely difficult for me, but I hope that it's a common experience for a lot of people who are, mm-hmm. who are creative. I will actually preface, you know, sending materials into people being like, just by the way, like, let me know if I'm just awful and if everything about what I'm outputting to you is just the worst thing you've ever seen. Cause I right. will take it. I will gestate it. And it is something that I think eventually, you know, once you get into talking with a lot of different either collaborators or people who are helping you like editors, you have to start kind of evolving out of the self prostrating mm-hmm. stance and understand that the one thing that they're looking for is clarity of vision.
And criticism is a tool in part of creation, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm also working, not in the same way Eugene is, but I'm working on some scripted projects right now and ones I hope to work on more in the new year, hope to tell you guys more about in the new year,
yes.
and hope to find ways to put them on the channel. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, yes. But an incredible piece of advice that I heard, not to me directly, was from Mr. Jerry Seinfeld. And this changed part of the way that I think about creation and may be helpful to young creatives out there, which is to separate the creation state and the criticism state. Because creation you need to be in the flow. You need to be just saying yes to your ideas and allowing yourself to take risks and do things that may not work, right? So when he writes, he says, I give myself an hour or 2 hours and I write and I feel great about it. Like at the end of writing, give yourself a cookie, put it away, don't show anybody it. You know, reward yourself and say, I did that thing and feel good about it. And then the next day you come back and you put on your other hat and you look at it critically. And that's when you come in and say, this is not as good as it can be. This joke sucks. This story beat doesn't make sense. But if you have that voice in your head constantly while you're creating what he says, and I found that I agree, you're going to get in your way, your own way, and stand in the way of discovery. I loved that. It changed everything for me.
Yeah. And, you know, people, I might be reiterating this, but, you know, this is a constant conversation I've had with the guys and anyone I've worked with for, you know, since we've known each other. Like, there's no decision that hasn't been made as, like, just as a group to recognize certain projects need to have space to grow, and it might not be conducive to do it either on the channel or even with the other people around you. Like, there's just, there's certain things that require different ships to sail.
Right.
And or just because you have, one thing you should also do is remember that you don't have to limit yourself to one ship. There are many ships you can, you're already, and if everyone listening, if you even have social media, you're already directing one ship. That's a ship you have to curate. You're curating yourself online.
It's maybe your cousin has a ship you could borrow.
Yeah, maybe you can get on your cousin's ship. Maybe you and your cousin can sail together.
But never feel like it to be, you know, narrowly defined by one thing, you know, because I think that's where people get really like caught up in this idea that once they envision themselves as one thing and they envision people that they follow or like as one particular thing. And we're all so much more than just one thing. And I think that's the big takeaway I always try to give people when we talk about these projects I'm doing especially is I was always more than one thing before I was a try guy, which is a very specific, finite definition that is also comparing me to a group that is different from me. So,
right. And the internet wants you to be one specific thing. Yeah. Generally, that's like what does well on the internet.
The internet rewards regularity, right? You look at the most popular TikTok channels, it's a guy doing it. I mean, our channel in and of itself is an anomaly and we get in our own way all the time by... You never know what you're going to get, right? That's bad for performance. Scripted stuff takes more time, takes more money to produce than the content that we make, right? That's incompatible with the platform. We talked about discoverability. I mean, there's ways to get around it, like Patreon. But also when you write a script, it needs to be bad about 75 times before it finally becomes good. That's incompatible with the rate of production. So all of these things, I mean... One thing that I find interesting is I'm trying to figure out, are there ways to marry the desire that I have over here with the thing that works over there? And here being scripted stuff, there being YouTube. And you know, the reason why you hear me wax poetic so much about the stupidest show of all time, Candid Competition, is because I've been able to sneak my little scripted things into it without it overwhelmingly hurting performance. Like that show is how far can I push a YouTube format closer to the stuff that truly tickles my inner creative happiness.
And I encourage, and I'm always delighted to see you doing that, Zach. And I think that, you know, if anyone is going to bridge that type of gap between the digital content and some of the scripted stuff, I'd like to see you and your new fiance, Miles.
Howdy.
Push that.
That's right.
Push that forward. But like
actually,
it is.
Actually, my ex. I don't know if you saw the finale, but
we got. Well, but then at the end,
But then we got back together. Okay. Yeah. So who knows? Yeah. To be continued.
Spoilers.
But yeah, this is a wonderful conversation. I think, you know, in the end, for me, when people ask me something, I have certain stories I can tell with the Try Guys through Try Guys formats. Mm. And there are many personal stories to me that could and should be told through traditional film and TV.
Yeah.
And that's just a matter of space and the way that these things are distributed and who I am very fortunate now to have the opportunity to work with who can enhance those stories, like other queer producers and Asian producers who are really invested in trying to get, because they don't really exist in that space yet, what I'm trying to tell. That's very exciting. And I think we all are going to, you know, get there at some point when we know that that's the right project. I just happen to be there right now. But it doesn't mean I'm dumping off when I get to go into the kitchen and put some weird shit into some dishes for some without a recipe, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not an either or. It can be an and.
Here's my question. Do you guys, you're both hardworking guys, doing successful, doing stuff. Do you ever think you'll work less?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, or does it make you sad to not work?
Here's the tea from me.
Yeah.
I don't know what gets rumored in the rumor mill for the audience and people who are just like very quick to react.
You kissed your cousin. That's the rumor.
Yeah. They're very quick to react to be like, someone's going to, he's, you know, whatever. If someone, they think that I'm not in a few videos, they think I'm leaving or something.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
What I'm doing is I'm still working as much as I can on Try Guys.
Yeah.
It's just that when you focus on projects that you're following, even, you know, without people knowing it, you're working on them 24/7. Like I probably get 6 hours of sleep a night just because I'm writing so much.
Yeah, it's wild.
It is wild. It's not healthy. I don't encourage that. But I am also in a mode that I'm kind of forced to confront that because I have so many things happening. So I am working nonstop. But that work that hopefully seeds what you're trying to do will inevitably create more work. And that work you put your heart and soul into and you're going to keep chasing. And I always tell people, like, every time I talk about this, I want them to know that I'm peculiarly blessed right now with the privilege and the opportunity to have this wealth of work. So I'm happy to do it. And I think that for me, it's always a qualitative ask of like, do you ever see yourself stop working? How much are you going to keep working? I hope I continue to keep working, even if it involves me not sleeping on really high quality projects, which includes the Try Guys. Mm-hmm. It includes our stuff. I just hope that we never get to a point, and this is kind of back to what Zach's saying, is that where it's just solely quantitative, like you have to hit a number, you have to do this. And that's where things like digital and social media, they get a little endangered because you might have to like release that video. You might have to hit a mark. Mm-hmm. And that is a tough thing.
Hard to do that.
Yeah. It's a really tough thing. And even kids these days who feel like they have to get a certain amount of likes on an Instagram post, that's not a really good place for anyone creatively minded to be in.
Right.
Your hope is that even
and
though
on the internet, if you're not growing forever, you're dying. Like,
it's
fuck,
it's a very tough space. Cause you know, if you're really like honing in on what you want to do as a creative person, or maybe just in life, like whatever your expressions are to relax or feel whole, it should never be dependent on solely a deadline or a number or something that feels like it's being forced because it has to exist. And that's what the big advice I give, like, you know, younger people who are, you know, more tied into social media in their everyday lives is don't let that notion replicate into your TV, your film, your novel, your whatever your relationships.
Yeah.
Quotas should not be had there because eventually you start working
too tough,
like seriously on things like writing a book, you're already going to be so inundated with just nonstop work that you don't need the extra thing to be like, hey, by the way, you want to make sure that everyone loves it and you hit this like it's already a pressure for things that require so much of your focus and time.
Yeah.
And you don't want that to be in the smallest thing, like a photo you post to, or a video you do on TikTok. You don't have to make, because if you make the lowest effort thing, like the highest stakes, then what's your highest effort thing going to have an emotional toll on you? It's going to be an even higher stake. So I just want people to just like relatively say like, hey, honor your story, those stories that you really want to do, and know when it doesn't have to be beholden to a system that is generated by an algorithm or by numbers.
Yeah.
And it can be really fucking fun too. Like that's the problem I have. It's not a problem. Like you talked about having a little amount of sleep. I imagine part of it too is that you're like, oh, I got it. Like you're following this. It feels like you're chasing a dragon or that you're, it's almost like you're whittling, right? You have this fucking block of stone and you're cracking. You're like, I see what's in there, but I gotta find it. And the other night, like I had a choice of, oh, I can catch up on Succession or no, I think I'm going to go right. And I ended up staying up till 2:30 in the morning because I just like all of a sudden I blinked and time went by and it was like I got lost in this world. And so will we ever work less? I was talking to a friend. I know a YouTuber whose goal is to just make as much money as they can and retire. And I'm like, that's a nightmare. Yes, but if I retire, it's because I want to retire to just be able to make these things now.
Right.
I never am going to, because for me, the work is the joy. There is a bit of a problem there when like you don't have that work-life balance because your hobby becomes your job. And I've had to navigate that and work through it. And I blah, blah, blah. We've all had to go through that shit. We're older, more mature people now.
Yeah. And, you know, finally, it should be noted that in any society, to be able to pursue your passions, especially in artistic field, it is a privilege. And it becomes a privilege that your job, even though things, you never want anything to feel like a job. Mm-hmm. If your job is aligned with your passions, that's a huge privilege, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mentioned waitering, and like, even I was doing that essentially more than I was being able to direct or, you know, could do writing like I wanted to. That's the reality for a lot of people. So like, you know, my hope is that I've noticed, you know, for artistic types, we always say like, I can never imagine stopping working because the hope is that I'll always be passionate about the jobs that are in place for me. Mm-hmm. It's a privilege I'm very thankful to have. It's a privilege we're thankful to have. And I think that when I hear my boyfriend say my goal after years and years of business school is to not have to work or for a boss or to work, I never understood it, but I also got that he's not 100% passionate about what his jobs are.
Of course, yeah.
So it is very much like a sobering thing where, you know, as much as I will tell people that I'm not sleeping and I'm constantly working, Zach hit it on the head. I am chiseling away at dreams. Mm-hmm. And that is ultimately the most fulfilling aspect of everything we've just discussed, is the ability and the privilege to do that. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm most thankful for this Thanksgiving.
Woo!
Oh, look at that. I mean, no, you said it better than I could. And the last little bit that I'll add, we're obviously talking about this in a professional capacity, but every fucking person in the world is creative. If you're going to look me in the eyes and say I'm not, I don't believe you. And like, yes, we have stuff that makes us special, but we're not special. We're special in that we have the privilege to make this our job. Mm-hmm. So like, you listening right now at home, do you have a creative project in your life? Do you have a job that you do not feel super passionate about, or like that you don't feel fulfilled in that way? You owe it to yourself to find a creative project, no matter how small, that is separate from your financial worth, that is separate from your social media worth. Find that fucking thing. And now there's a lawnmower outside. Yeah. I'm gonna put myself on mute. Oh man, I cannot tell you how fucking wonderful it makes your life. That's my bit of advice. But if you want advice, it's a little worse.
Yeah.
It's a little saltier.
Yeah.
That might make your genitals stand on their end.
Oh God, we're back to the genitals.
Yeah.
Well, then you might need some advice from a man named Miles. And happy Thanksgiving, motherfuckers, because this is advice that'll go for miles with Miles.
Bonsignore. It was like Imogen Heap. Wow. This music producer. Damn.
What's up, Miles Nation? Thank you so much to Sav Surrett.
Holy shit.
Sav Surrett.
Was that Sav's again? Fuck.
That's Sav's so again.
I don't know if you cut to me at all during that. I took everything in my power to not make noises because I didn't want to disturb how fucking beautiful that was.
Yeah, it's Sav's.
Can you send me that MP3 really immediately?
Good. Absolutely.
Oh my God.
Sav's makes hits.
Oh my God.
Highly fucking recommend. Sav's made a Guilty Pleasures theme song. Sav's made
so good.
Other Advice I'll Go for Miles theme songs. Huge shout out at Sav Surrett. So if after that you need a little piece of advice, have you ever wanted to be dry?
Where?
Everywhere.
No.
Have you ever wanted a dry taint? Have you ever wanted?
I want my taint to feel like sandpaper, Miles. Go on. I'm on board.
Stickiness,
Darling, let's save that for after dark. I'm talking about a dry everything. Getting ready
Why
to...
Why did you say taint? Why did you... Oh, man, we had... This is the most, like, 180 head-spinning podcast. We went from this kissing cousins conversation.
Yeah.
Fucking a turkey.
Are you kissing your cousin advice. And you want it to be dry?
And now you're bringing it to the dry taint. Okay, continue, Miles. I'm very on board.
I'm talking about poo. I'm talking shampoo. I'm talking dry shampoo. Spray.
If you put it on your taint, it will burn. I do not recommend it.
Yeah, don't do that. Huff.
Why are you putting dry shampoo on your taint, Zach?
I'm saying you shouldn't do it. It's but Miles not said that his baby powder. Okay. I just want to make sure that the audience knows. Right.
It
not
sounded
spray
like
you
were speaking from experience.
It's not baby powder, okay? Don't put it on your taint. But
sorry,
I am
Miles,
telling you,
what'd you say?
Put it on your oily little hairs because it's going to dry shampoo. And I didn't know about this. I mean, I knew the existence of it. Women everywhere are not going to be surprised by this advice because it's extremely common, I think, dry shampoo. But I feel like it hasn't made its way into the male space as much
as it
should.
Well, you're saying put dry shampoo...
On your hair.
On your hair, okay.
Not on your taint.
I thought I was lost.
I don't put dry shampoo on my taint. And I know that me denying that makes it sound...
Can we get that? Just taken out.
Taken out. And I know it sounds like...
So you just discovered it.
Well, I just hadn't used it before. I knew it existed, but I just was like, my hair was oily and I wanted to go to do whatever I was doing this weekend. And Sarah was like, use some dry shampoo. And I did it. And it was exhilarating, honestly, because I found that my hair gets greasy as fuck and it's hot in LA and it gets extra greasy. And I don't know what that's about. So the dry shampoo helped me get ready for the day, helped me get shampooed up without getting wet.
But you love getting
Gene,
wet.
I love getting wet. I love getting soaked, Eugene.
Yeah, you love bathing.
I love to bathe, but I don't have time for a bath always. Oh. And a shower feels like
too much
energy.
I think I told the viewers this, Eugene. I don't know if you know this, that one of the first times I met your boyfriend, Matt, we were at the stripping show, the male stripping show for the Try Guys Try Stripping.
Yes.
And I follow Matt into the bathroom. We're at a urinal together. And I just kind of slowly turn and I go, "What's the secret to your hair?" he goes, "I don't shampoo." And I'm like, "Ah, no shit." He's like, "Yeah, I don't shampoo. And if you need it, dry shampoo." And I'm like, "How about that?"
Wow.
So I stopped shampooing. I only shampoo like once a week because of Matt McClain.
That's huge.
Wow. Look at that. While you were at the urinal.
Yeah, I harassed him at the urinal. I try and corner Matt. People.
Yeah, Jesus.
Like, I get people when they can't escape.
No. I mean, that's kind of, I mean, your hair journey has been pretty remarkable, Zach. So, if anything, just get more gay friends.
Hey,
yeah,
that's my bonus advice. Get more gay friends.
Yeah.
I think that's a great advice to keep kind of always.
Not like Pokemon, but, you know, just get in the circles.
Yeah, don't catch them all.
Yeah. But can't catch me.
have gay friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, I co-sign that.
That's really good.
But, I think...
Get less straight friends.
Yeah.
Just balances it out.
Balances it out.
Weed them out.
Perfectly.
Have you been continuing the dry shampoo journey?
I did it 2 days in a row. And let me tell you, my taint has never been...
Silkier?
Silkier. No, I just like it. I found that it was cool. I just don't know why it's... I feel like it's one of those weird products that's only marketed for women, really. And it's like, why? But I just am confused by that type of product. Similar to how like the good razors are marketed towards men and the shitty razors are marketed towards women.
Yeah. Yeah. That's both on the advertisers and just on the binary sort of pushing these ideas about everyone.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Pink tax.
Hey, I think you had pretty good advice this week.
What can I say? I tried.
Do you have any happy holiday messages, Miles, for the people?
I'm telling you to get out there and fuck your turkey, kiss your cousin.
Oh, God.
And enjoy
dry shampoo.
Some dry shampoo while you're sipping on a vegan pumpkin pie.
Vegan pecan pie.
Pie is what's excellent.
Which does, for some reason, not sound
vegan pecan pie.
What's the crust? Pecan pie is basically just fucking sugar.
That's true.
It's just. A lot of, have you, like, honestly, my biggest takeaway from All of Our Without a Recipes is how disgusting food is. It's just
food
every
is,
baked treat. It's just,
food is
just
nasty.
Dump sugar. It's crazy.
It's pretty gross.
It's crazy what we eat.
I agree.
Well, No matter how you celebrate today, we hope you're having a safe holiday.
Damn right.
You will find I'm probably with my family right now, eating darn Korean tootin' food, drinking some wine.
Yum.
Wine and whiskey.
I'm going to eat shrimp.
You're having shrimp?
I'm gonna eat shrimp. Thanksgiving shrimp.
That's
get
nice.
On my level, people.
I'm probably going to be baked as hell, kind of eating a turkey.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to definitely.
Classics. Got to keep you away from turkeys, Miles.
Why am I going to fuck the turkey that I eat?
No, you're not a heathen.
You're a different turkey. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Think that part through.
Were you man, the cousin, oh, Miles?
It was no. Ew, it was my wedding. It was not the cousin. Excuse me. Cousin in question. The C.
Sure. I'm going to have to.
CIC.
Text the old Bonsignores to see. Yeah. Then be like, oh, that story.
It was not me. It was someone else.
We had such good time hanging out with your parents. I feel like we gotta get them back in. Get them in the studio.
Let's bring them on in. They'd love to be on.
Honestly, a pod of just a parent pod.
It's just our parents.
Just replacing us. None of us. Just maybe someone here just to press the right buttons.
It's really funny.
Honestly, Rainey hanging out with our parents, I feel like it'd be the best day of her goddamn life.
That's a great idea.
All right, well, Zach... hit us with official tripod theme song.
Hit it, Zach.
Well, Keith ain't here, so it's me and Eugene just hanging out. And when I'm done with my little Kobe Exposey, gonna give him a hug.
I thought we retired that term, Zach. No. Miles, say the thing Ned says that I hate.
Until next time, stay beautiful. Mm.